Damas y caballeros, welcome back to Freeform Radio on the Freeform Network. My name is Daniel. I am one of your hosts. I'd like to welcome you to the podcast. I'm here with two other guys that make up Freeform Network and Freeform Radio. First, we got Noel.
What's going on, everybody?
And right next to him, we got Andy.
I'm sacrificing everything to be on this podcast.
Heck yeah, sacrificing some of this heat, you know, people turning off their fans, except for me, you know, because they want to sound clear. I figured the hell with it, man. A little fuzziness in the background, man, I got to stay cool, you know.
It's cool, man. You just shower afterwards.
Right. But we're back together, joining up on this podcast. Going to have some quick discussions about some things we've been up to and then jump into a subject that's really hot right now. But first, before we start that, I'd like to pass it over to Noel and his conversation about the UFC 228. It just passed. Tell us about it, man. What piqued your interest in it?
Well, you already know, man. I love UFC, and I love MMA in general. So I always stay tuned to the UFC fights every time they come on. And it was a good one. You know, it was a pay-per-view, so they usually try to make it interesting and, like, stack some good fights here. I don't want to say it's, like, the best pay-per-view they had, but it actually did turn out better than what I had thought initially going into it. There was about 12, 13 fights. There was supposed to be 14, but somebody unfortunately didn't make weight, and they got sick, and they went to the hospital. So that championship fight, it was a women's championship fight, was actually dropped. They're going to probably have to do it at a later time. But the main event for this one was Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till. So I don't know if you know these guys, but Darren Till is an up-and-coming English fighter, and he was really being hyped up for this fight. Everybody thought he was going to win. He was like the obvious favorite, and even Dana White, like the president of UFC, was really giving Till the benefit of the doubt in terms of his skill and everything, and which is unfortunate for Tyron Woodley, who's the champion currently, and he's been getting all sorts of disrespect from everybody. And it's been intense, this lead up to the fight. It happened in Dallas, Texas over the weekend, September 8th. And spoiler alert, it's coming up. Tyron Woodley won second round submission on Darren Till, and he did so well. Darren Till only landed one strike to Tyron Woodley's 74 strikes.
Wow. So what weight class is this, Noel?
This is 170, welterweight. This is welterweight. The one that GSP, George St. Pierre, vacated. This is the one he left.
So you mentioned Till was the favorite. Is he that much better than Woodley, or?
Well, Till, he fought some of the guys that Tyron Woodley's fought, and he did pretty well against them. He did a good fight against Stephen Wonderboy, and everybody saw him as like a precision striker, somebody that could knock Woodley out. But people are sleeping on Woodley. Woodley knocked out some pretty decent MMA fighters, and he's defended his belt three times now. And so people were sleeping on him pretty hard. And he's an amazing athlete, dude. Incredibly jacked for 170. I think he weighs in at like 205 naturally, but he cuts down 30 fucking pounds around there to get to 170. And he looks shredded, man. He looks healthy. He fought him well. And he gave Till a run for his money, man. He knocked him down in the second round. And then from there, that's pretty much all she wrote. Weakened him bad in the first round, too. And so in the second round, he finally got the submission locked in, and he finished him with Darce choke. It's pretty much like it's kind of hard to describe. I'll send you a link one day if you guys want to see a video of that. But it's an insane choke, not that easy to get. But if you're not that good on the ground, if you're mainly a striker and you're not able to see these things coming, oh, you'll be put to sleep real fucking quick.
Damn. Can it beat the Million Dollar Dream?
God damn, what the fuck is that?
Million Dollar Dream, man. Ted DiBiase, man. When he slipped that on you, you're going to sleep, man. And he's got the W. I throw in an old school WWE reference or WWF. Nice.
Damn, that was before my time, man. I was the Attitude Era, so I was more like the Taz Mission, you know?
All right. But yeah, so were there any other top fights, or was this Woodley Till, was that, did it live up to the expectation you wanted?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people hated on Till, because he's kind of like an arrogant person, and he talks the talk, you know, he talks like McGregor does in a similar way. He has his own style, but they both have that trash talk in them. And so a lot of people didn't like that, but a lot of people don't like Woodley either because of the stuff he said before. And so it was one of those things where people are divided, and I didn't think Darren Till deserved the title shot that he got. I don't think, because he didn't make weight. He wasn't 170 when he fought the last person he fought to get this title shot, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He wasn't at 170 when he beat him. So to me, it's like you didn't rightfully earn this title shot. So in my mind, I'm like, you're not ready for this. Like, you don't deserve this technically. If you win, you win. I'll accept it. But I was kind of rooting against him on this one. And he did lose. So after that, I'm like, you know what? Now he's humbled. Now he realizes it's not as simple as what he thought. You're not a god. You're not going to just go in and just destroy everybody. There's going to be people that are stronger than you and that you have to get better from. And so I'm curious to see how he recovers from this loss. He was humbled, and he did come out afterwards, and he still believes in himself. He's still a little bit of the cockiness in there, but he's definitely more realistic. And so hopefully in the future he has a good career. He's only 25 years old compared to Woodley, which I think is in his 30s. He's 36. So Woodley is definitely going to be on his way out in a couple years. Terrell's be coming up in the next couple years, so we'll see what happens with that. But that's that's UFC 228, man. There's some other good fights on there. If you get to have a chance, you know, check it out. I'm sure they'll have like reruns and stuff on the Fight Pass. It's worth seeing. There's some good knockouts in there. Carolina Kowalkiewicz, she went up against Jessica Andrade, and that's I believe 115 pounds. And this is the first knockout in the female division that I've ever seen, and it was brutal as fuck.
Wow. I was like, so I don't really Ronda Rousey was the last big chick fighter that I recall from UFC. Who's the hot name right now? Who's up there in that division?
All right. Well, actually, there's another fighter that's up and coming. She won the Ultimate Fighter. Her name is Tatiana Suarez. She rebounded from cancer. She had like a really tough upbringing. And she has this, like, warrior spirit, dude. It's ridiculous. She absolutely destroyed Carla Esparza, who nickname is the Cookie Monster. She fucking made her eat all those fucking fist cookies all up in there. It was ridiculous. If you see this fight, you feel bad for Carla, dude. It was devastation. So that's who I would watch out for, Tatiana Suarez, man. It's a fucking beast.
But, sweet. Yeah, it's good to hear that the women's division is still hot, you know, because ever since Ronda went to wrestling, it's kind of lost my interest. I haven't really kept up with any more of the women fighters from the UFC.
Yeah, dude. You know, she did pave the way for a lot of these women fighters. I don't want to say she's the best or nothing, but at that time she was. But everybody has their turn, dude. That's a common saying that I believe in. Everybody gets their turn, and there's a lot of really talented female fighters coming up. And definitely keep track of it, man. Like, their fights are always entertaining to me because they have nothing to lose and everything to gain. So they put it all out there. They're fucking warriors, man. And they have a tolerance, like, for taking shots. They take some shots that probably would knock me the fuck out. So, you know, it's definitely worth a watch. They're getting better, definitely. But that was just UFC. I did have some other things I wanted to kind of just throw out there, a little shout out. There's some YouTubers that I've been watching that just really got my attention. I want to just throw it out there for anybody that, you know, listens to the podcast that's looking for a new YouTuber to watch. So you guys know I've been into like working out and stuff like that. I actually had leg day today. And pretty exhausted, but I took a shower, feeling refreshed now. Anyway, these guys, his name is Juju Mufu. It's kind of a weird name, but it's a YouTube channel with this really jacked guy and this really out of shape guy. And the really jacked guy, he looks like a kind of like a Thor looking guy. He's like blonde hair. He's really like kind of tall, jacked, and he's training this other guy, his like friend, on pretty much just to get better shape. And you see the progression from the start to where they are now, and it's just incredible, dude. Like, it's funny too. They throw in comedy and stuff like that. So I really recommend you guys check them out. Every episode is entertaining. They throw out a lot of like just weird jokes, and they just have this their personality is how should I say, magnetic. Like it makes you want to watch them. And so yeah, if you guys get a chance and you're looking for some people to get motivated to work out, Juju Mufu.
So how long has the podcast been or the YouTube been going on, as far as you know?
Years, probably dating back to like 2014, maybe around there, 2015. They've been going on for a while, but the friendship between this guy and the other guy, I think it's been more recent, probably a couple years. Okay. And every video is just, it's really weird. Like, it's really funny, though. They do get serious with their workouts, but they also do like parkour. They do like different strength training exercises. And it's just, it's hilarious, man. You got to give it a chance one of these days. Just watch a couple of their videos. They're not too long. Some of them are like 20 minutes. Some of them are like 15. And yeah, they get a couple of laughs, man. It's good to watch, get motivated. And so that's Juju Mufu. Also wanted to throw out, especially considering that you've been having that issue with the heat in the house. You know, you want to get that cooling going. There's this channel that I've been watching. It's called King of Random. And what they do is, it's a bunch of like weird science projects that they do. They consistently make different inventions, different projects to do. And one of them that would probably benefit you is this recycled styrofoam air conditioner for about $30. You can get a styrofoam cooler with some PVC pipes, a reusable small fan. And if you just follow the instructions through the video, you can make yourself a high-quality air conditioner that would last you a very long time. And it's a small enough unit that you can take it around the house to wherever you need it, even outside. If you have like a nice little patio table or whatever, take it outside, put it on the table, and direction it to you. It'll lower the temperature around you by 20 degrees, and they've tested it scientifically. And wow. So that's just for their projects.
Is there something where they just, the King of Random, do they focus mostly like on house stuff or cars, or they're just across the board, it's everything?
I want to say it's just about everything. They have so many different videos. And if you want, let me just read off a couple. Making an epic marshmallow launcher out of PVC. Making slap bands with random household materials. They teach you how to make a metal foundry, a homemade one, how to cast iron, or like not iron, but cast metals like copper, aluminum, do-it-yourself magic sand, arm-mounted taser flamethrower, do-it-yourself shields from hardwood flooring, how to make cotton candy, how to hydro-dip anything, infinity stone power bands, just anything you could think of. These guys, they just love making weird science, dude.
The hell's hydro-dip?
You know, you have to watch it, man. Take a look.
Hey, that interests me.
Yeah. Take a look, yeah, man.
Junior's watched some of these King of Random videos, and they are pretty cool. He makes all sorts of things, you know, with just regular household stuff, like launchers or slingshots or, like, you know, like these little explosive darts that he throws and that blow up. So he's really, really inventive and does a lot of stuff, and it does look pretty interesting. I know Junior, every now and then, he binge watches them, and I glance over, and it looks interesting. It looks cool.
Yeah, man, if you have a chance, you know, give them some of your time. They even do, like, life hacks. They put them to the test to see if these life hacks actually work, and most of the time they do, and it's pretty intriguing. You know, they do it in a scientific way, which is what I like. You know, they explain it to you in a way that almost anybody could understand. It's kind of like having a free science class. So give it a chance if you guys have it. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got, guys. That's what I've been doing mainly, just working out, watching UFC, and, you know, checking out these new YouTubers and stuff, trying to learn some stuff. But what about you, Andy? I heard you're doing some stuff with this documentary you've been watching.
So I have a lot of YouTube bloggers and channels that I watch, but once in a while I get tired of seeing so much fuckery. I'm like, I have to educate myself a little bit. And actually, my wife picked out this documentary called The Hot Coffee, and I brought this up to Danny's attention. I think instantly he thought it was something with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas or something.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought about.
But basically, it's about frivolous lawsuits, and I was kind of, so they go into frivolous lawsuits, the documentary, but the big one they start is with that lady, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, that brought that McDonald's coffee, and she spilled it on herself, and she got burnt, and she sued McDonald's, and she won, and they're like, they gave her like something like $3 or $4 million, and people are like, oh, it's bullshit, it's like a frivolous lawsuit. And from there, companies came up, or mostly like lawyers got together, and they're like, we got to stop some of these frivolous lawsuits. And the documentary dwells into that, like a couple major lawsuits. But the big one was the coffee one. Now, if you see pictures of this lady and how bad she got burnt, it's pretty sickening. Because, you know, the documentary goes around asking, oh, you heard about the hot coffee McDonald's also. Oh, yeah, this dumb lady spilled coffee on her. Like, what the fuck, you know? And she sued and she won a lot of money. I wish I would have won this. So they start calling it lawsuit lottery. Like, oh, shit, I hit the lottery. This happened to me. It's a company's fault. I'm going to sue. But the burn she got, like, the lady needed skin grafts. Oh. And her family sent the letter to McDonald's saying, like, yo, you need to take care of this, man. Like, we want you to pay the medical bills. And they're like, yeah, fuck you. We're not doing anything. You're just a dumb old lady. And so...
Yeah, how old was the lady?
Oh, she was like in her 70s, man. Like 60s.
Oh, man.
And people are like, oh, yeah, she was driving and she bought the coffee. Well, they delve into the details. Like, she wasn't driving. Her nephew was. Her grandkid. Somebody in her family was driving. And she couldn't get the lid open. And that's how the coffee spilled on her. Because people are saying, oh, she was driving and she spilled it on her and she sued. And then McDonald's already had complaints about the coffee, like it's being too hot. Like people in the past have complained. And the documentary goes into the number that complained. But regardless, McDonald's was at fault. But they don't tell you afterwards. The McDonald's took her back to court and they settled on an amount for damages, even though she got awarded $5 million, they settled afterwards because the lawyer, our judge said, like, nah, you're awarded that's too much money or something, and they downed it down to like $500,000 or something like that. I forget the number, but so from there, you know, the last 10, 20, 15 years. There's been, I remember under Bush, you know, we got to have tort reform. Tort reform is about lawsuits, you know, doctors being sued, you know, frivolous lawsuits clogs up the judicial system. And I was a big, not proponent of it, but I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of people taking advantage of the system. But the documentary delves into people who did use the system, what it's intended for. You have the right to sue somebody if you're wronged. You have the right to go up in front of a judge and a jury of your peers. And, if it's frivolous, 9 out of 10, or something really stupid, a good judge will throw that out because, like, this is a stupid lawsuit. Like, get out of here. But what the companies are afraid of is, like, man, if we take it to a jury and we're on our fault, we're going to get screwed for millions of dollars. So they started creating, like, a publicity and, like, oh, we need tort reform. And the documentary really delves into that, like, each state passed laws, caps on your winnings, and people don't know about that. Like, If you something happens to you at your doctor and he's not he doesn't do something that he's supposed to, and you sue, and the jury awards you like $20 million, there's like a cap on how much you could win per the certain states, and it could be like $1 million bucks, and then after your lawyer fees and taxes, you know, you're left with like $200,000 or something.
Yeah, I do remember when this happened, the lady spilling the coffee. And to be honest, I don't know too much about it. I probably know as much as that lady that was getting interviewed that you mentioned that they just grabbed off of the street. I always thought it was just some lady driving, being una pendeja, and dropped the coffee right on her lap. You know, that was just my natural feeling from the little bit that I heard about it. And, you know, I know you've told me a little bit more of the details, but before that, I didn't think McDonald's was at fault. You know, everything is labeled hot coffee. So for you to think that it's anything but hot, you're the one at fault. You're the one with the ignorance to think that, hey, I could just pop this lid and drop it on me and it's going to be fine. No, you know, it's hot. It's going to burn you.
Well, think about it. So it more benefits the corporations. I mean, as much as I hate to say it, so if they have these caps on lawsuits, like, you know, always GM and like Ford and like the big car companies, they know something's fucked up, right? They don't. It's like, it's going to cost us all this money to repair this shit. Let's just let it get out there and we'll deal with the shit as it comes. And, you know, let's deal with that as it comes. And it'll probably save us more money in the long run. And the average person, so they're like, if something does happen there, something with the car blows up or the brakes. Or remember, I think Toyota allegedly, I don't know if they ever fixed it, was the car would accelerate on its own. You know, and they never really came up with a solution that I remember. I haven't really researched it, but if somebody dies or something, they're just like, you know, they'll sue us. Hopefully it's an estate with caps. Let's see what happens, man. And they still save money. And that's a corporate company being, you know, they're being negligent and they're not looking out. They're looking out for their well interest, not us, the consumer. I mean, that's just like one of the basic things. But the malpractice one, in the documentary, they talk about some malpractice ones. And it was pretty, like, it was messed up. And the family just was looking for something because a doctor didn't do something. And their kid was born with issues because she didn't do a simple test. And they went to court. They won. They asked experts, my kid's never going to be able to work. He's never going to, who's going to take care of this? How much money does he need? So he doesn't become a burden on like society and all this. And they said like, oh yeah, you're going to need about $7 million for care and doctor's visits and all this. They won it, but there's a cap in that state that they live in. I believe it was Nebraska. And they ended up with like $1 million bucks. And after the, like the lawyer fees and the, whatever, the guy got left, the kid got left with $200,000. They went through that money so quick with all their surgeries the kid needed, and now he's like on Medicare. So now the U.S. taxpayer is paying for that kid's insurance once a doctor fucked that up, you know?
It is sad.
It's horrible.
And so, yeah, I'm just like, well, that person got wrong. The doctor was at fault. 9 out of 10 times they have, you know, I think you're required to carry insurance for this type of stuff. And it wasn't her first time being that lady that was sued for malpractice. That was like her fourth fucking time. That doctor, according to the documentary, and, you know, that's messed up. How can that person, you know, morally, too, that happened? How can you not feel, you know, you are responsible for that?
Is there a way to look up how the awards vary state to state?
The documentary, I think they had a map, and I think out of the 50 states, it was like 40 of them had caps. Wow. So it's a big chunk, and You know, I'm like, when something happens, I'm not like, man, I'll sue the pants off of you, you know? I've never been that type of person. But, like, with shit like this, when somebody is at fault, and you can't be a provider, and you can't provide for yourself, I mean, they are responsible, and there's a cap, then shit, man. Like, this is not right. Who knows better than, like, a jury of your peers, a whole freaking system of, you know, the judicial system, and is in the United States is set up like this. I mean, and even if the jury's, like, screwed up, a judge could be like, yo, you guys went a little overboard. Let me scale this back some. And then you guys could work something out.
Yeah, I just think that there's been so many people that abuse this that they had to pass legislation to kind of cap it, just because businesses go out of business from stuff like that. You know, doctors lose their, you know, have to close their practice because of, you know, abuse of all these lawsuits. So it has become a huge problem to where they had to pass this legislation. But now, did it go too far? I mean, I could speak from my personal experience. I was in a jury once many years ago where they wanted to give this guy that got hit by a car, a police car. So he was suing the city, and they wanted to award him, like, you know, I can't remember the details, but it was like $10 billion. It was like some astronomical amount. And I was just like, no way, man. No way can we award this guy this much money. I'm like, that's just not reasonable. And I'm like, the city of Chicago is going to have to pay this amount for, you know, forever, you know, for as long as this guy lives. And it was just some astronomical amount. And I remember I talked the jury down a little bit. And then when the verdict finally got was about to be read by the judge, you could see it in the judge's eye. He was taken aback. He was just like, what the hell? Because even though I talked them down, it was still some astronomical amount. And the judge read the verdict. Everybody was kind of shocked. And when I was walking out, I went to shake the guy's hand that was suing, the guy that got hit. And I heard another lawyer on the side saying he's never going to get all that money. They're going to retry this and settle on something less. So yeah, it was just too much.
They talk about that in the documentary, you know. It's just like when the jury does give like a crazy amount for like, was it negligence and punitive damages and all this, there is a number that legally they have, they could come to a number the courts have. But a jury is allowed to give more, but a judge has control over that, because realistically, if it's some crazy number, they're never, 9 out of 10 times, they ain't getting that. And then they come to some sort of agreement, and, you know, but even though they come to an agreement, there's caps per the state, depending on what state you live in, on what you can get.
It's a crazy situation, man, because, like, how do you put a number on the value of a life?
Yeah.
You know, how it's affected. Like, emotional trauma or physical trauma. Like, how do you put a number on it and say, this is what it needs to be? You know, it's hard. And then as long as you have companies in bed with the government, that's how this thing is going to play out. They're going to get the better end of the stick, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it changed my mind to show I am open-minded. It changed my mind on some of those, you know, tort laws and stuff. And, you know, because it does show, like, the system, it was working. I mean, there's a frivolous lawsuit. A sensible judge will throw that out. But so check that out. The other big thing I have going on, I've been looking for I need a new tablet, and I've been debating if I should go. I got an iPhone. If I should go back to getting an iPad, or go back to an Android. My last two tablets have been Samsungs. They've been pretty solid. The Galaxy But this last one I bought kind of crept out of me 6 months ago. And I'm debating if I should go back to Samsung. I read some of the reviews because the best reviewed tablets are their iPads. But the iPads doesn't let me do some of the sneaky shit I like to do on the internet.
I hear a lot of bad things about Apple recently, especially about how, like, their shady business practice. And, like, if you need repairs and stuff, sometimes they'll make you buy a new one instead of repairing it because it's their fault.
Yeah, exactly. That's my thing with Apple. It's a quality product, but their openness, they lack of openness they have with their iPhones and all that, and it kind of limits me. The iPhone's great, but, like, when I with the tablet, with the Androids, you know, it's open. It works great with other applications. I love Chromecast. And, you know, to me, that's where I'm probably going to end up getting the damn Samsung Galaxy. It's just a matter of which one. And I've been researching. There's, like, so fucking many. And the one that I did like is, like, $500 fucking dollars. And it's, like, this huge one. I'm like, I don't want that. I want the a 7-inch one. And because I need to see, you know, videos that to see, like, fucking video, like, my YouTube. YouTube works great with, it's an Android thing, so it works great with my Chromecast. Usually when I'm doing that, I pop in YouTube and watch some reviews. And speaking of reviews, I've been watching the latest Spider-Man game review, and everybody's jerking off to it, Danny. I'm not saying you're jerking off, but do you agree with these assessments of your fellow nerds on the new Spider-Man game? Because, you know, I know you bought it. I know you wouldn't have stayed in line at midnight to go buy this fucking game.
Actually, I did pick it up, and I take offense by you insinuating that, you know, while I'm watching Spider-Man shoot his webs, you know, I'm shooting something else over here.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But seriously, I did end up picking up Spider-Man. It released last Friday. By the time you listen to this podcast, it might be longer than that for sure. But I ordered it. I pre-ordered it. And then because of all the hype, like Andy mentioned, and everybody agreeing that, you know, it does appear to be a good game. But for whatever reason, you needed a signature for it. And guess what? When they came to deliver, nobody was home. So they returned it back to the hub. So it kind of got sucked because I was kind of looking forward to playing it over the weekend. So I had to, you know, contact FedEx and get a redirect shipment and have it shipped to one of their FedEx stores so I could just stop by the store and just pick it up. So I wasn't able to get it until Monday, so I went the whole weekend without it, which it's all right. You know, I was kind of excited because I kept hearing all the buzz about it, but I figured, hey, a couple more days, whatever. But to be honest, it's been now about 4 or 5 days that I've had it, and or 3 or 4 days that I had it, and I have barely played it. And it's not because I haven't had time. It's just that Junior hasn't really let me play it. He's been playing it nonstop since we got it.
I thought for sure you would have beat it by now.
No. It does look cool. It looks like a huge open world game. It's a third person game or third person view. And it looks sweet, man. The swinging mechanics look really sweet. The graphics look really nice. And Junior appears to be really enjoying it. And I played like a quick mission that he let me like get my hands on the controller. And it was nice, man. It controls really nice. The combat seemed really cool. You know, there's a bunch of dodging, a bunch of punching, webbing, grabbing stuff from the environment. So it was pretty sweet.
Similar to Batman, right?
Yeah. The fighting is a lot like the Arkham games from Batman. It has the same sort of mechanic where you get an alert system telling you, hey, get ready to dodge. Somebody's shooting or punching or something. So they are very similar. And I like the Arkham games. I played those and those were kind of good. So yeah. I fell right into it. It was cool. And I know you played Arkham, right, Noel?
Oh, yeah, dude. Love the series. It's a great series.
Yeah,
I was really hyped up for Spider-Man 2. It's probably one of my favorite Marvel characters.
Yeah, it's really nice. I've always liked the teenager point of view kind of thing. I don't think you were too hot on Homecoming, Andy, but I know I really dug it, and I thought it was a really cool movie that showed a lot of his teenage side and a lot of his personal issues that he had to deal with.
The last Spider-Man game I played was on PS2, and I remember fucking kicking ass through that game, and the game had no fucking ending, Danny. You remember that game?
Well, it had no ending because you just keep swinging through the city? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like a couple of Spider-Man characters and shit. That was on the PS3 or the PS2?
I think you're talking about the PS2.
Yeah, that game. And I was just like, man, fuck Spider-Man and this shit, man. And then the PS3 one came out, and then I don't even remember playing those.
I played the time travel one. That was pretty cool. Or like dimension travel one.
Yeah, Shattered Webs or something. Shattered something, yeah. I forget.
Something like that.
Yeah, I didn't play any of those last ones that came out for PlayStation 3. So this is my first one that I've played since PlayStation 2, and probably like the game that Andy's talking about. But yeah, it was pretty sweet, man. From what I can tell, it looks like a really sweet game. Hopefully Junior will go to sleep soon, maybe after this podcast. And then I'll go play for a little bit before I go to bed and be able to enjoy it as much as Junior is, for sure.
Sleepy, man. I thought gamers played all night. Sleeping is for babies.
I think that's for, like, teenagers, man, because people with jobs and have to get up in the morning. I can't do that anymore.
What about if you're buying that Wii, man, like that guy, man? You remember that?
Yeah, that meme or the clip with the guy waiting in line. And they're interviewing him, and man, this guy's—he's a character for sure.
But yeah, G4 TV.
Yeah, they don't got that channel anymore, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it turned into something else, and by then
isn't it like a Spike Now or something?
No, it was it turned into Esquire, and I don't even know if that's around anymore.
Wow,
that's all I remember.
That's my little bit on Spider-Man. Don't really have too much hands-on impressions, but it looks pretty cool. The graphics look sweet, so excited to maybe get some time this weekend and play around with it. But the other quick game that I beat a little bit ago before I played Spider-Man was Shadow of the Colossus, and that's a re-release of a game that came out on PlayStation 2 as well.
Yeah, so that was the... Yeah,
that
came out on PS2, right? It was like these big robots or something.
Yeah, the original one came out on PlayStation 2, and it's like these big—they call them Colossus, but they're like big Bigfoots or whatever. They're like these creatures that have icons or symbols that are their weak points. So you have to climb these Colossus, find the weak point, and stab it. And the story is really, really unique and interesting in that it's very minimum. There's really not any kind of introduction. There's nothing telling you what you really have to do except for some small narrative at the very start. But it just has like a couple cutscenes, and it just throws you into the game for you to try to figure out what you got to do or how to continue. And once you get the gist of it, the ball really starts rolling, and you really start getting a feel for what you have to do in the game. And the endings is one of like a big, you know, turn of events that you really didn't see coming. So it was one of those games, PlayStation 2, that I was really fond of. And when they re-released it for PlayStation 3, even, I played it again. So I beat it for PlayStation 2. I beat it on PlayStation 3. And then they finally re-released it for PlayStation 4. So you knew I had to get it. And I played it one more time and finally beat everything a couple weeks ago. So it was really sweet, and it still holds up just the way I remember it from PlayStation 2.
So what's the reasoning for making it on PS4 if you have it on PS3 already? Is it the 4K version, or what's the difference?
Yeah, the PlayStation 2 was the original one, and then on PlayStation 3, they called it like the Collector's Edition, and they bundled it with Ico, the game that they released prior to Shadow of the Colossus. And on PlayStation 3, it was just like an up-res version. So it was like a little bit better graphics. But what it is a PlayStation 2 version, but with a little bit prettier graphics. But it's essentially the same game. Well, for the PlayStation 4 release, they actually redid the whole game from the ground up. So it's not a remaster and it's not an up-res to 4K or 1080p or nothing like that. They actually rebuilt the entire game from scratch all the way up and created a new PlayStation 4 version. And man, it looks beautiful. It plays great. They fixed a lot of the controls because that was probably like the only negative about the originals. Is that it controlled really weird. I don't know. It was a Japanese game, so I don't know if that's their normal button pressing for jumping and doing whatever else. But it didn't really give you an option to change that, so you were stuck with that control scheme. But this new one, it came with multiple control schemes, but they fixed it more for, you know, Western play habits and a little more modernized, so it was definitely a lot better control-wise, and it just held up exactly the way I remember it. So it was sweet, man.
Let me ask you this then. What does that mean, Western play? What, the Japanese play it different, or their control, the way their buttons are set up is different?
Well, that's what I'm assuming, because it, like, used the triggers a lot for, like, jumping, and it was like, really awkward. I mean, eventually you get used to it from playing it for long enough, you get used to the control scheme, but then you go play something else, Call of Duty, and then you jump back into this game, you know, maybe like a month later, and you have to relearn the controls because it's not intuitive. It's not something that you pick up and you're like, yeah, this is the way I play all my games. It is different. So the old games, the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3 version, it took some getting used to, but the PlayStation 4, man, it was sweet. It was just like playing any other game. And I beat it just like the other ones, and it was good, man.
Is that a Sony exclusive? They published it, they did the whole thing on it, or, you know, yeah. Or is it, yeah, across the board on all platforms?
No, it is a Sony studio, so it is just on PlayStation platforms. So it's the only place to play it. And like I mentioned, Ico was their first game that they released, and the Shadow of the Colossus. Then after that, they barely released one a few years ago called The Last Guardian, but that one took like 10 years to make, and it was kind of half broken and really didn't play well, so it really didn't get the critical acclaim that Ico and Shadow of the Colossus got. So Shadow of the Colossus is probably their gem of that studio. But speaking of gems, man, the other thing that was really hot and really sweet is that football season started. I mean, by the time people hear this podcast, it's probably already a couple weeks in. But, man, it is exciting. We just saw the first game, or at least I just saw the first game as of the time of this recording. And even though my Bears lost, man, it was exciting to watch the new team, the new coach, watch the NFL roll out. And it was just really exciting, and it really got me pumped. And another part that makes it exciting is that Junior actually sat down and watched the game with me, which is a new thing. You know, usually he doesn't sit down and watch football with me. So that got me super pumped that maybe it's something we can start doing, some traditional, you know, watching the Bears game together. So it's very exciting, man.
For all you international listeners, it's American football, not your football.
Yeah, it's the real football, not soccer, man.
Damn, I weigh. You're looking for trouble there, sir. but yeah, man, football's back, and it's awesome.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, it's really exciting. I can't wait to watch more games. Junior even got so excited that he wanted to spend some money on a new Bears jersey, which is really not new. It's I got him a Peppers jersey. Is that bad of me, Andy? Because it was on clearance.
It's better than a Grossman jersey or something. I think it's still within the timeline, okay, of cool, acceptable. Cool. Unless it's like you go to a Hall of Famer or something. But yeah, Peppers is, I guess it's all right.
You guys should try to get him to do some, like, some work around the house so you can earn some money. And if he really is serious about the Bears, then he can spend a little bit more money that he earns getting that like official jersey.
Yeah, for sure, man. Because you know, it got me excited that he wanted to watch it with us or me. So I did want to get him something, but at the same time, in the back of my head, you know, that cheap ass of me, I was just like, man, do I spend $70 on a legit jersey of today's characters? And he wears it once, and then he's just like, man, football's dumb. I'm going back to YouTubing and whatever else he's doing. Or do I just spend, you know, the $10 in the clearance rack that I found the Peppers jersey and go, yeah, he'll like this. It's got the Bears colors, and it's a Bears jersey. He'll enjoy it.
No, yeah, man. Peppers, I think he is a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's going to be for the Bears. It might be for another team, but it's cool. And it would have been cool if you could have found like a Ditko one or something like that, or Dan Hampton. That would have been sweet.
Well, I wouldn't have found it for $10. That'd probably be a little bit more. But I don't even got a Hampton or a Ditko jersey or nothing like that. So, shit. I've wanted a Peyton jersey forever, but they're just too expensive, man.
Just got to keep digging, man. You'll find one eventually for the right price.
Do you got any jerseys, Andy?
Yeah, I got a Ditko one. My sister recently bought for me, and I do have some, I don't have Bears one, but I do have some Sox ones. A football one, I do have a Mike Ditko one.
Man, I'm jealous, man. But yeah, getting back into the swing of football, man, it's exciting. Hopefully Junior sticks with it, and we'll be able to put that jersey for use. But speaking of football, man, Andy brought this engaging topic to us, in which I imagine everybody out there is aware of. It's the Nike deal for signing Colin Kaepernick as their sponsor. And it's not only Colin Kaepernick. I think there's a few other players, like for tennis, it's Serena Williams and a few other people. But Colin Kaepernick is the football, you know, ambassador, or the football representative for Nike. And it is causing a little bit of an uproar with people and fans out there alike. So I don't know what your feelings is, guys, for this. I mean, he's definitely a very compelling character. He's very, you know, newsworthy or very buzzworthy for all his, you know, antics or things that he does. What are your thoughts, Andy, quickly about what's going on with Nike and them signing Kaepernick?
So, you know, we all seen people burning their fucking Nike shoes with their still wearing them, like fucking morons like that. But in the bigger scope of everything, you know, he was protesting whatever. That's my question to everybody. What the fuck did he protest? I mean, very people don't know what he was protesting. All they know that he was kneeling before the flag. And then the campaign slogan is, you know, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Well, what did he sacrifice when he was kneeling? He was a fucking second string quarterback. He got demoted. He wasn't even a starter. And, you know, he got kicked out of the NFL for kneeling. And, you know, so I think that's why everybody's up in arms, because they just know that he was kneeling. And what did he sacrifice? What is he protesting? And, you know, the majority of Americans, I believe, they don't know what the hell he's protesting. They just know he's kneeling, disrespecting, you know, the flag. And he could protest, but to me, where he's doing it and how he's going about it, I don't approve, but it's his right. I don't like it. And, you know, that's why everybody's pissed off.
Yeah, I don't even think he knew what he was protesting at the very start. But first of all, this is America. You can protest. That is your given right to do. And it's also everybody's given right to be upset about it, about your protest or about the way you're protesting. but it is definitely your American right to protest. That is something that has happened since the day of America, man. It's like Martin Luther King founded. Protesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was tons of protests.
The Boston Tea Party. Yeah.
Exactly. So, especially peaceful protest, I'm totally for. When it gets kind of violent, that's where there's some kind of judgment call that you got to make as to whether it's warranted for what's transpiring. But any kind of peaceful protest, for sure, man, do it. Do it as much as you want. But I think one of the big underlying issues and maybe why this has gotten so much traction is that he's kneeling during the anthem. And that's seen as disrespectful, which I'm kind of torn about myself personally. I see it as being disrespectful because you're kneeling, and it is something that I've always been proud to be an American. So when that national anthem is on, I stand up and I'm proud. I take off my hat. I put my hand on my heart. And it is something that I am very grateful for this country for allowing me to become the man that I am. But at the same time, kneeling down is not to me something super disgraceful. I mean, we do it for proposing to people. We do it at church. We do it for worship, for our gods or whatever you believe in. So to me, it's not a negative thing. It ain't like he's shitting on the flag or, you know, he's like dragging it in the dirt. There's definitely tons of things that are more disrespectful to the flag than, in my eyes, kneeling down.
Yeah, no, you got a point. You got a point there. I think a lot of people are upset that he considers it a sacrifice when people have given their lives for their country or their cause. Rosa Parks got arrested for sitting in the back of a bus. Martin Luther got killed. Martin Luther King got killed for his beliefs. Malcolm X for his beliefs. There's been a lot of people throughout history who have, you know, protested against racial injustice and have truly made sacrifices to better the equality and the equality amongst the races. And so I can see why people are upset about him saying it, like he sacrificed everything. But in a sense, if you want to play devil's advocate, he kind of did. He sacrificed, I bet, a lot of his friends. I bet he sacrificed his position, his career, his future in the NFL, which, I mean, if you're a football player, that's pretty much all you got, right? If you don't have a football career and you're a football player, then what are you, you know? So he's probably going to be struggling unless he gets something
like Nike. Well, he's getting paid. He's getting paid from Nike.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And, so, you know, that's the other thing, you know, he's trying to be a brand. And, you know, at first it was some form of activism, right? Like, I'm a protester. This is why I'm... And he did come out what he said because, you know, he feels, or what we all see on the news, you know, black men getting shot by the police. You know, that's a whole other argument. But in his eyes, you know, we know the country's not perfect. There is problems in this country. But that's why he says he's doing it. But from that position going into, you know, he stated when they first found out what he was doing, he goes, and I quote, "This is not something that I'm going to run by anybody." He said, "I'm not looking for approval. I have to stand up for people that are oppressed. If they take football away from me, my endorsements from me, I know that I stood up for what is right." And he already lost his job at that time. And then there was already John Elway this year came up when he was in exile or whatever. We offered him a contract. He didn't want to take it. And now he is turning all the, I don't want to say it's all for money. I believe in his mind, he thinks he's doing the right thing, but he had opportunities to come back. He didn't. He's suing the NFL for collusion, saying they're blackmailing him. Now, no team's going to take him now for sure. But he was offered a contract last year. He didn't take it. And now he's turning into... Nike has a lot to gain from this. He has a lot to gain from him, from this. Nike's always been a brand that I don't want to say they're on the edge, but they like this shit. They know that some people were going to get pissed off, but they doubled down on Kaepernick that, you know, they I imagine they researched the shit out of this, and they know what market they were going for, and that's why they picked Kaepernick. They figure the people who are with Kaepernick are probably going to spend twice as much as the people who are pissed and saying, we're never going to buy Nike again and burning their shoes while they're wearing them, you know, and they doubled down on this. So, yes, they lost stock, but now the sales are through the roof because people saw this shit, you know, and Nike is also, I feel like, somewhat responsible for bringing this shit up, and it's all time, right, when football starts. You know, they knew this. I heard some people say it's a culture war. I kind of agree with that. You know, it's the timing of all this is, you know, oh, it's our 30th year of the Just Do It campaign. And again, if you ask the average person about this shit, all they know is he was kneeling. They don't even know why the hell he did this. And why he did this, I completely understand it. And, you know, but he hasn't really talked about it, you know, and now other players are doing it now. And then the NFL let this continue to go and not really nipping this thing in the bud. They're like, if you guys want to protest, we're all with you. Just don't do it on the field. Don't do it on the national anthem, because you know what? They did lose a big chunk of their audience because of this. I really truly believe that, because Trump came up. He's like, yeah, look at, he called them, I think, sons of bitches. The football players when he was running for president, and that got people, man, yeah,
it was SOB, man. Now you interpret those initials how you want.
That's exactly what it means. But you know, in the bigger picture, like, a big chunk of America got pissed off. There are people who truly sacrificed everything, you know, MLK, Malcolm X, you know, those people, they paid their lives for their cause. But this guy's making money off of it. So, you know, that's my two cents on that shit.
Yeah, I had a friend. He was in the military. And he posted something on Facebook about this. And I kind of took it to heart. I was like, you know what? You got a point. And that's when I kind of stepped away from this whole, like, situation. I was just like, you know what? It's just blow it past me. Like, forget about it kind of thing. What he said was, because he was in the military, he's like, this guy has every right to kneel down if he wants during the anthem. We fought so that he has that right. Doesn't make him right or wrong, but he has that ability to do so if he wants to. And he's like, I'm not against Nike because he kneeled and because they're endorsing that. I'm against Nike from the beginning because of the child labor that they use in China. And he's like, if you're burning Nike shoes because of something as petty as this, but you don't give a shit that they use child labor in China, then you're just fucking psycho to begin with and irrelevant. And I was like, yeah, that makes fucking sense, man. You know, I've never really been a fan of Nike since I found out about that.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. Nike is not a good, I'm not saying they do a lot. I feel like in some of the big inner cities, they donate a lot of stuff. But Nike is not perfect either. They, you know, almost all these companies do that, you know. And people are like, oh, you know, donate your shoes and all this other shit. And then people brought up that, like, you know, they use child labor to make those $100 shoes and they pay them pennies or whatever. But, you know, it's none of these guys, I feel like, again, Kaepernick hasn't really explain. I just know I don't like it. He hasn't really explained his cause, and the average person, the average NFL fan, they just see this, and the rest of America is like, why are you kneeling? Get the fuck up. And real quick, there was a study done in January and February of this year that 53% of Americans think it's never appropriate to kneel during the national anthem in protests. And guess what? 53%. There's probably the same 53% that voted Trump in. And that's rallying off for Trump. You know, all these people who think Trump's going to get out, those are the same people that are voting for him. And even though Kaepernick has a right to say, he could say all that shit he wanted. People, he had all these platforms to say what he wanted. He didn't. He just once in a while he'd say make some dumb comment, or he had a the communist guy shirt and all this, and it's just, you know, I feel like he fucked up, but apparently he's getting paid, so what do I know?
You know, he probably just did it on a whim. He's like, oh, let me just, you know, do this because I feel a certain way about it. And then it blew up, and he probably didn't even know how to react to it. Like, holy shit, what do I do now? You know, all right, fuck it, just go with it.
That was my feeling when it originally happened. You just see him, he kneels down, and they asked him, he's like, why are you kneeling down after, like, a few games that he did it? Mm-hmm. And you could see, like, he was trying to get the wheels moving to kind of come up with, like, some good reason and not just be like, yeah, my ass hurt, so I, you know, I dropped down to my knee or something stupid. You know, he was trying to figure out something good, and he came up with this social injustice from police officers shooting, you know, black teens or black people. So I think his reasoning for that social injustice is a very good reason, and he should protest for that. But with all this publicity that he's getting, use that platform, man. Go out there and talk. But I think the reason why he doesn't do it is he's not an eloquent speaker. You know, much like my stuttering ass, he doesn't know how to speak well. So... because he doesn't know how to speak well, he can't be that face for it. All he can do is bring attention to it. But this movement or whatever it is, it really needs somebody to come up, speak, and bring this information to the people. Bring the statistics to everybody. Let them know about all the problems in the inner cities where police officers might be abusing power, but at the same time, maybe bring to attention that there are good police officers out there. So just bring all this information to everybody and use this platform that he has created for something constructive instead of just being quiet and letting people speculate, letting people hate on him. Maybe if he explains himself, people will be more understanding and less upset about him kneeling down and really rally behind him and try to make a change for the better, for sure.
Again, he spun it around. You know, he's not in the NFL. You haven't really heard much. Football rolls around. I don't know who went to who, if Nike went to him or he went to Nike, but they struck a deal. He's making money. Now, I've read stuff that's in the millions of dollars, so, you know, he ain't like this fucking pure, you know, oh, I'm for the cause, brother, and I'm ready to, you know, go march or any. It's none of that. He's making money off of it. So, you know, again, that is, I mean, this is America. You're going to get paid. We all want to get paid, but it's kind of like a hypocrisy unless he, like, donates all the money to, like, some victims fund or something, which he might do, but we don't know.
He wouldn't be the first person to sell his soul for money, man.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but that's our take on this. We got to wrap this up, guys. So again, we want to get your thoughts and questions on this subject. You can send your questions and suggestions to ffnquestions@gmail.com. check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Hit us up with that hate or love tweets, negative, positive, whatever. I'll shoot back some shit at you if you're fucking with us. And then don't forget to check us out on the Freeform Network at .podbean.com. And there you see all our links to all our fucking multi-platforms. We hopefully won't get kicked out of, like, some of our other fellow people who have shows. We're still on YouTube. You know, we love that we're on YouTube. We're at Podbean, Stitcher, Spotify now. You know, we're on all these platforms, so check us out. Hit the subscribe button. I want to thank you guys for listening. I have Danny.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for listening.
And Noel.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Take it easy.
And this is Andy, and we're out. And I'm going to sacrifice something, and hopefully it turns into millions of dollars. And we'll catch you guys next time.
That was cool, Dad.